Log
Saturday morning to everybody, and welcome to a great show we have here on Suspense Radio. I'm your host, John Robb, and today we are going to have author Stephen J. Schwartz coming up here in about a half hour, and we hopefully are going to have Kim Harrison on here early. Not sure if we got a little mixed up. We're going to see if we can get that arranged together and get her on to talk about her books. So we had a great time at the RT Book Convention. Going to talk about that, get some publishing news, some ebook news. Big time ebook news just came out. If you Google that and watch the news and see what's going on, because major developments, Amazon getting in the mix here, talking about now Google's getting in the mix here. A lot of things happening, a lot of things going on, very exciting things, very nerve-wracking things too. So stick around, because 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio starts right now. Some exciting news that I always go out and I scan and I look and I see what new things are out there. I check the book publishing world to see if anybody's, you know, mad at anybody else or whatever else is going on. And what I found is on CNN Money and a bunch of other sites have now listed, and this is now officially number one, I guess, is that ebook sales now are the number one format for books. They've now finally topped paperbacks. For the first time, you can check it out here, like I said, on CNN Money, and there was a bunch of other Chicago Tribune, a bunch of places, you know, picked this up. But ebook sales totaled over $90 million in February, which is up 202% compared to the same month a year earlier. So if you just look at the, you know, like I said, just the trends going on, and this is the fact that when you walk around an airport or wherever you walk around, I still, you know, don't see a lot of ebooks, Kindles, or things and people reading them. I was walking around the RT Book Convention, and, you know, I might have seen 11 or 12, and people were actually having those signed instead of their books. But it's amazing to think, you know, 15 years ago when, or 20 years ago, not everybody had cell phones. Cell phones weren't a big thing. You know, people had them, but, you know, they were big, they were bulky, they were really expensive. You went over your minutes, you had $1,000 bills, and you heard all the horror stories. And so they weren't what they can do today. And, of course, now there are many computers that you walk around with, and you watch your TV, and you do whatever else you want to do and read books. So when you're thinking of the fact that, you know, book sales are, you know, billion-dollar business, you know, many billions of dollars across the world and here in the U.S., and now that the ebook totals have finally topped the paperback totals in really a short amount of time. I mean, it hasn't really been that long since we've been talking about ebooks. You know, maybe a year and a half. I can't think of, you know, us talking about it any longer than that. So I think that that's extremely alarming to, you know, print publishers and things like that, that you better get on board. It's, you know, Amazon was the one that started this. I mean, they started the Kindle. And now, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I believe that they were the first ones to have an e-reader, and they had the Kindle. And, you know, Amazon has always been in front of the technology. I mean, they're like Apple. Amazon and Apple are always out in front of the technology, and they always are the ones that do the new things and bring, you know, all those new innovative things out. And this is why Amazon, you know, and the book publishers always kind of hit. Because, of course, going to Barnes & Noble, you got a hardcover book that's $27. You go on Amazon, you get it for $14. And, heck, in only four states pay tax. And you live in California, I'm going to tell everybody a little hint. You live in California, now you do pay sales tax on what you buy. But never, ever, ever choose anything but free shipping. Because they ship from California, people. So you're going to get it in a day and a half. You don't need to go and do the, you know, do the expensive overnight shipping or anything else. If you live in California and you're listening here, you use Amazon, do not use anything but free shipping because you're going to get it in a day and a half anyway. So if you order in the morning, you're probably on Monday, you're probably going to get it on Wednesday because they ship it right out of California. So why waste the money? So you're already paying the sales tax, which is a whole another issue, which, you know, get into. But it's, again, a short amount of time, and here it is. What I'm waiting for is for companies to come out and this and that, and all of a sudden the e-book readers are like the tablets, because now you have 55 tablets that are coming out from all these different things, and iPad's already on number two, and, you know, you have the Zoom, which comes out, and the Galaxy, Samsung, so all the big cell phone companies, you know, are starting to bring out their tablets. And you're reading books on tablets and all this other stuff. So it's not going to be too much longer before all that happens. And, again, you know, you can find us anywhere. And the best place to do is just go to Google, go to Yahoo, click on news, type in book publishing, and you'll see, you know, these things all over the places. And you'll also see how Amazon and the ebook and the book publishers are, again, butting heads for the simple fact that, again, Amazon wants to sell their books cheaper, and the book publishers don't like that. Now, you know, we were at Thriller Fest last year, and we heard the Random House lady talk, and she was saying that that's Amazon doing that. That's not anybody else doing that, and Amazon is the one who's doing that on their own. And so they still get the full money for it and whatnot. Well, they're not bringing it down to the authors, which is now why you're seeing a lot of authors leaving and going out and doing things on their own. And I'm not saying that's not a bad thing. That's a smart thing. You have yourself a good fan base, and you want to cut out the middleman and just take the profits for yourself. You know, that's good, and I think that's a great thing. I think it's going to be a little more difficult for the authors to kind of do that without having maybe like a buffer here and there to be able to help market them and this and that, because, you know, book publishers aren't very good at, you know, getting your books out and into the stores, what little stores are left. But they do that, and that's a very big positive, you know, that they do accomplish. So it's just something that you need to watch for. And like I said before, if, you know, the Kindle's lowering, I myself am not a Kindle person. I'm a Sony e-reader. I like that because I can get my digital Adobe copies. You know, we are on NetGalley, and we get a lot of reviews, and a lot of publishers are now putting their books on NetGalleys instead of sending them to us, which I wish they would do more of, because I think it was last week we had, we got about 70-some books in the mail. We're on pace to get over 2,500 books to review this year. And, again, that's just in our genre. If we were a magazine, you know, that reviewed everything, like a Publisher's Weekly, I mean, imagine, I think they get over 7,000. We're talking 2,500 here just in our genre alone of what we cover. So you can see that, you know, our genre is the biggest one out there. I mean, when you look at the New York Times bestseller list, which, you know, I was just taking a look at, which now they are combining print and ebook fiction together for the first time, and they started doing that a couple months ago, but now they're combining the print ebook, is that, you know, you have Michael Connelly number one and number three, with the Fifth Witness and The Lincoln Lawyer, and I think that has largely to do, of course, with his movie that's out. And then you have Mary Higgins Clark, I'll Walk Alone. So you have three right here out of the top five that are, you know, in the suspense area. And loosely, is The Water for Elephants, which, again, that's up there because I know that the movie's coming out, I think, with Reese Witherspoon is in it. And, you know, that's loosely suspense, more drama, but, you know, that's also one that's there. So the suspense, mystery, thriller, horror genre is bigger than ever, better than ever. There's so many great things that are coming out in those areas that, you know, you need to go and find. Now, the problem is this. Where are you going to go? And we were talking about this the other day. Is you're going on Amazon, you're going on all these places, and you're going to see, okay, you know, who's the new ebook, and, you know, who's the book, you know, the authors to go out there and find, and, you know, you want to see some, you know, new authors, new thing, you know, somebody different, and, you know, you just don't know where to turn to. Well, when you go on there, your head's going to spin when you start going, because, you know, Amazon Kindle has, I don't know, they have millions of books that you can go out there. But how do you differentiate the ones where, you know, somebody's just going and throwing stuff out there and you have no idea if it's, you know, who they are, which you have no idea who the other ones is, but how do you differentiate the ones that, you know, have went through the process? And what I mean by going through the process, we talked with at RT Convention, which I'm going to talk about, with Doug Lyle, and we went over there because he's going to, you know, he's involved with ITW and the Thriller Fest and all these things, and they're trying to figure out how can they get more authors into, and, you know, and how they encompass this ebook phenomenon into ITW, because they don't want to alienate these, but how do you differentiate the books that have went through the process? And the process is, you have a book, you send it, and the book publishers take and they edit and they scrutinize and they go over and they make sure that it's very, very polished, 100% polished. Now, people send things to us all the time, and we look at them and reread them, and, you know, we'll send them back, and, you know, we'll tell them it's just not ready. I mean, it's just not ready to be done. And so, you know, they're going to get upset. They send it back. Oh, you know what you're talking about. This is the greatest book ever written, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, it's not, because you didn't really edit it. You have mistakes and this and that. So they just get all upset, and they say, fine. And they just throw it out there on Amazon, Kindle, Smashwords, wherever, because it's free. But you have no idea, you know, that book is probably not one that you're going to finish, but you're going to spend your $4 on it, and maybe it gets a little bit of, you know, 10 reviews, and people are out there, and the guy's friends went out there and put out great reviews saying it was 5 stars. And so you find it, you buy it, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this was ridiculous. Well, there's a little thing that you can do, and it's a little trick. And if you just go on any book, no matter what book it is, and Amazon is very good because they list out the whole shebang here of everything that goes on. You get the reviews and everything. But look in the product details. And in the product details, you're going to have what format and the file length and everything else, but you're going to have the publisher and who it's sold by. Now, if you see names out there that you do not recognize because you're talking, it's John Doe's publishing company, and that's what he puts as the publisher, it's probably not one that's been through the process, and it's probably not one that you really want to pick up, because he did not take the time to go and you know, and get that thing looked at and edited and redone back and forth and everything else. So just take a second to look and see, you know, you're going to see the bigger publishers or things like that, and just see who put that out. Now, I'm not saying that all of them are bad, because that is not the case, and there are some out there that are probably pretty good, but you're going to notice a big difference in the fact of books that have made it through the process and been edited and done those things and stuff like that than books that have not gone through the process. It just makes them for a much better read. It's the same thing when you're looking at a movie. You know the ones that they spent the money and the budget and they did very good job, got the, you know, good actors, good actresses, great, you know, special effects, the whole nine yards. to ones that are, you know, not like that. And you're just not having a good experience because, you know, it takes away from the experience of a book if you have to continually look and you like the grammar's there. You have, you know, just basic English things, a misspelled word here and things messed up. It takes away from your experience even if the story is good. So I would recommend anybody who's writing, and this is no matter what you're writing. I don't care if you're writing a 1,000-word article on the inception of whatever, and you're sending it to somebody, have it edited, but not by your father or your mother or your sister or your brother. Have it edited by someone outside who will give you an honest opinion, let you know where your things are, let you fix it, and you might have to spend a little money to do it, but your writing, if you look at it, is going to be an investment. If you just want to have your book out there and published and, you know, have your friends buy it and whatnot, by all means, don't worry about that. But if you want to use this as an investment to where you say, you know, I want to be taken seriously and I want, you know, my work to be professional, then you need to go and you need to do it and you need to hire an editor. You need to get somebody out there that's going to look at your work and give you honest feedback. And that's the thing. Criticism is honest feedback, and take that for exactly what it is, because it is. It's honest feedback. And it's not that your work is bad and whatnot, and it just maybe needs polished up. So, you know, think about that. We are at the RT Book Convention, and it happens every year, and it's a huge convention put on by Romantic Times. They've changed their name now to RT Book Review. They've been around. This was their 29th convention here in Los Angeles just last weekend. Great event. I highly recommend, you know, they go around to different parts of the country every year. Next year they're going to be in Chicago, so in the Midwest. And if you're close enough to be able to go, I highly suggest you taking in one of these conventions. The thing that I found just off the bat, and this is Saturday, and they had it's a book fair, and it's set in the big room, all the tables set up, the authors are everywhere, they all got their stuff. But what I found very interesting, just from walking around and looking, was the amount of children that were in there reading, interested, talking to their author. And yes, RT is more heavy romance, but a lot of dark urban fantasy, a lot of romantic suspense. You know, they had other things, you know, people that weren't suspense at all, or weren't romantic at all. You know, like Barry Eisler is there, and, you know, Rick Mofina was there. We had a great conversation with him, and we're going to have that in the magazine. And a lot of, you know, just different other battles is there. So a lot of other people, Boyd Morrison, and they are not a romantic author, but they were there, and they were, you know, it was great to see them at this because there's the amount of kids walking around there. They were just so excited. And I got to be honest, 85% of these authors, I had absolutely no clue who they were because I'm not in the romantic scene, the romantic young adult, you know, scene like that. So I had no idea. Just to let you know, it looks like we probably are not going to get Kim Harrison on. I think we had a little fupa maybe with trying to the numbers for her to call or whatnot, and you know we had scheduled this about a month ago, and maybe things messed up. But we'll get her on because she was excited, and things do happen, and I'll get with the publisher. But I know Stephen J. Schwartz will be on because we were just talking to him, and we met him for the first time at the RT Book Convention. He was on a great panel, and it was very intimate. It was really good because it was going on, I think around the same time that Dean Koontz was there, and he was there. So Dean Koontz is at the convention, and he doesn't get out a lot. So people were, when he was there, people were flocking to him. But Alexandra Solikoff and Stephen J. Schwartz were both screenwriters. And they were in the Hollywood business for many years doing screenwriting. And I'll tell you what, you listen to them, you do not want to be a screenwriter because you are pulling your hair out every day, left and right, getting gray. I'm surprised that, you know, both of them survived because they was, you want to talk about a very, very treacherous business where you get no love, no play, no nothing. You just get run over all the time about everything. And so they are now very successful authors, and Stephen J. Schwartz has two books out called Boulevard and Beat, and so very fast-paced thrillers. You know, I started reading Beat when he gave me a copy of it, and I started reading it. And right off the bat, I mean, it just throws you in and doesn't let you go until you finish it. And Boulevard is the first book in the series. And then he did another thing which I thought was extremely intelligent, which I've been begging authors to do, is now with the ebook and the things like that, is he put out his own prequel called Crossing the Line, and to talk about him. But beyond all that, when you go there and you hear the panels between Alexandra and Stephen, they have, that was the only panel, I've been to many of them, and that was the first panel where I actually took away so much information that I literally wanted to sit there and start getting myself into a room and just start writing, because start writing the book that I've been you know, working on and thinking about for quite some time, because they broke it down to taking it from screenwriting into books and how books are formed, which are about the same way that movies are done. And they were showing you, you know, the things to look for in movies, where it's, you know, the cut scenes and how the act 1, 2, and 3 goes on, and you know, how things happen and how they move it. And you can see it a lot more in a movie than you can in a book. And they were, you know, breaking it down into the sequences of how things are done. So basically, when you're writing a book, you can sit there and, you know how to break things down and how the audience is going to react and how to place it together. And it was just amazing. And so we talked to Stephen afterwards, and I mean, the guy's been in Hollywood for years, and you just have no idea, because, like I said, you just don't get a lot of love when you're in those things. But you find these things out when you go to the conventions, whether it's RT or whether it's Thriller Fest or whether it's BoucherCon, because you get to meet your, you know, you can meet your, you sit there and you can talk to them, and they're all open. They love to talk to people. We met Catherine Coulter there for the first time. She was great. You know, she took our picture. We had her picture taken with us, the magazine up, we're on her Facebook, tagged the photo, whatever that means. I'm not really sure about tagging photos, but we got our photo tag somewhere. Met Heather Graham, love Heather Graham, and her husband. You know, we ate with them. We went to the, they have a play that was there, and it's just really funny, and it's just extremely, it's just really well put together, and it's the Vampire Ball, and I'll tell you what, those people dress up, and they love it. And that was on Friday night, and it was a huge vampire masquerade ball, and people were dressing up, and we were lucky enough to get in there. Now, we weren't dressed up. I looked like a vampire anyway, or kind of like The Walking Dead, so it didn't make that big of a difference to me. My wife was with me, Shannon, and we were able to go in, and we were to see everything that was going on, and, you know, walked around and went to the panels. We saw Brenda, you know, we met Brenda Novak, and just a lot of great people. Allison Brennan is there, and D.P. Lyle, again, is going to come back, and he's giving us a 3-part series that's going to be in the magazine. And just so everybody knows, the April issue has arrived, and it's going to be out, so you don't have to email me about that, because we are mailing them out. But, you know, D.P. Lyle is bringing back with another 3-point series of into the magazine, and he's just a fabulous writer. And, you know, anybody who's an author, and he'll tell you, you know, he's a medical doctor. He's not a forensic scientist, and that's not his forte, but he helps authors out. And this is one of the great things that you need to do when you're researching books and you really want to be serious about it, is if you are stuck at something and you need help figuring out how a body's going to look or how things are going to do, you can email Doug Lyle from a site, dplyle.com. You can email him and say, Doug, look, I got a body. I want to burn it. What's going to happen to it? What's it going to look like? He'll tell you exactly. The one thing he is going to tell you, too, is that you can't have a corpse bleed. And it was just funny on how many times you see, you know, corpses don't bleed. So if somebody gets shot in the head and they die instantly, there's not going to be, you know, you're going to have maybe blood splatters, but you're not going to have the big amount of pool of blood that's just everywhere all over the place, because corpses don't bleed. When they die, the heart stops pumping blood and it doesn't run out anywhere. So it's just the little details that he helps you with that you just don't know about until you get there. And, you know, he'll tell you openly, email me and let me know what's going on. So, and he'll answer all those questions for you. Now, Stephen's going to be coming up here shortly. So the other thing that I was going to talk about, too, is the Amazon war, like I said, that was going on back and forth, because they're lowering their prices and they're doing all these things, that Amazon is probably going to win. And they've been winning, and they have been winning, and they're probably going to continue to keep winning, and you're going to see books that are lower. So Amazon, again, is the one place that is going to lead the way into the beyond. And so, what you know, when you have your Kindle and you have your things like that, Amazon's the place that you're going to look to first in order to, you know, find these things out. So the other thing that we have to, you know, consider with all these ebooks and all these things that are coming out, and when you're talking about, is going to be the marketing part if you do decide to do things on your own and go out there. You're going to need to have some help in marketing. You're going to need to find bloggers. You're going to need to find people to review it. And it's a lot of work. Don't think that it's going to be something that's going to be quick and easy. It takes a lot of work. So not only is writing the book a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of effort, but it's also the after effect and the setup of it, of the marketing part that you have to do coinciding it. Because if you have a great book and you're sitting there and it's out and you're ready to go and you put it out there, and then all of a sudden, boom, you don't know what to do and you are kind of lost, and now it's been out there 3 weeks and you still haven't had anybody look at it or review it. Set these things up ahead of time so when the book comes out, you can have these things coincided. We have a another article that I'm writing in the magazine, and it's going to be a little bit twofold. I sent some questions out. Tess Gerritsen's going to help. David Morrell has already sent in a lot of stuff that he's doing it, and so I'm writing it together with the three of them, and that's about the challenges writers face in the future, the book publishing thing that's going on, but I'm also incorporating, and I found a great place for marketing that I'm going to incorporate in there also, and that's something to that you want to go ahead and look at also is, you know, like I said, the marketing aspect of everything, which is extremely difficult in today's day and age for authors, is the marketing part, which is why, you know, they're going to all these conventions and heading out, doing shows like ours and doing blog shows and this and that. So give me 60 seconds, and we are going to be right back on here, and we are going to be bringing on Stephen J. Schwartz, author of Boulevard and Beat, and we'll see you in 60. Join us here is author, like I said, of Boulevard and Beat, and someone who we just met at Artsy Book Festival, and I have to tell him, and I emailed him, and I told him earlier that I was kind of upset that, you know, because Beat kept me up that night, and I was not real happy about having to stay up and read, and then also the prequel, which is extremely smart, Crossing the Line, which he published here on ebook, is none other than Stephen J. Schwartz. So, Stephen, how are you doing today? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, hey, you know, it's a little early here in L.A., but the sun came shining through bright, and the heat is now getting to us. So no better time than, I guess, to wake up and do this.
It's lovely Southern California. We can do a lot worse.
It's the schizophrenic weather.
Yes.
So we met you at RT last weekend, a great event, and, you know, you were there talking about your book Beat, which is the second book in your series, which features Detective Hayden Glass, and finds himself, you know, moving a little bit from L.A. and he's an LAPD, going up into San Francisco and things all happening. Tell everybody a little bit about Beat and, you know, how things are kind of progressing with it.
Well, Beat is probably a little bit more of a traditional thriller than Boulevard. Boulevard was both a mystery and a thriller combined, whodunit and how do we stop him from killing again type of book. In a sense, it was kind of a Hitchcockian thriller. Beat is more of a standard classic thriller in that the protagonist, Hayden Glass, needs to, you know, stop something from happening. And what makes it a little bit different is that he's responsible for setting things into motion to begin with. It's his actions that caused a young woman to be kidnapped in San Francisco. This began when his addiction kind of morphed from strip clubs and prostitutes to the internet, and he started kind of getting an internet porn addiction while he was on a leave of absence from the LAPD. That led to him meeting a woman in San Francisco and going up to visit her regularly, and then one day he goes up to see her and she has run away from the place where she works. So the investigator that he is, he tracks her down very carefully, canvasses the city and finds her, but in the process leads the people who were chasing her right to her door. So the moment he finds her, she is kidnapped, and for the rest of the book, he is trying to find out who's got her and why and trying to keep her alive.
Yeah, like you said, you know, this is more of a traditional thriller, and the action is just, you know, kabam, 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 and it just keeps going and going. And it almost seems like the roller coaster that you keep going up the hill, and then when you go down and when you start hitting that point, when you go down, it just seems like it just continues to go down and gets faster and faster. And that was a little bit different from Boulevard to Beat. What kind of made you decide let's kind of run it this way in a more of a fast pace than, like you said, more of the mystery style that Boulevard was?
I think it just presented itself that way. Boulevard established the character, gave his background, gave his psychological state of being. So I didn't really need to revisit that. I just wanted to take that character and put him into an impossible situation where his guilt pushed him forward into action. And there's just a lot more, the speed of the thing, I think, provided a lot more fun. There's also actually real romance involved in this book, whereas in Boulevard, the sex scenes were kind of dysfunctional. They were all based upon his own addiction and the prism with which he viewed sexuality. It was just not very healthy. Although there were moments when he got close to that with the love interest in Boulevard. But in Beat, there's an opportunity for him to actually, you know, to learn a little bit about what this kind of intimacy is, real human intimacy is. And he begins to find out, you know, what it means to care about someone else. And that conflicts with his view of the way he objectifies women in his addiction. So he's struggling with all of that as he's trying to save this one girl and what he believes is to be, in a sense, it's a selfish reason he wants to save this girl because he wants to run off with her. And that viewpoint changes throughout the course of the story as he grows and learns what a relationship really is, and ultimately he decides that he's the only one that can save this girl from everyone else. It's just the speed just kind of came at me, and it felt like that's the kind of story that needed to be told for him, you know, at that moment. Just drop him into a situation and let him get beat up. There's a reason it's called Beat. He's beat through the entire book. I mean, he's just beat to hell. So it's a lot more fun, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and kind of the fast-paced stuff and the things are a little bit more fun, and it's all, but it's also exciting, like in Boulevard, you know, where you're kind of holding the reader back a little bit from, you know, what's actually going to happen, and you're just going to go kabam and kind of throw it at them, and it's like, wow, you know, it's like you never see that. So both sides are really enjoyable, and, you know, since you were in Hollywood and worked screenwriting for so many years, I have to wonder, did Hayden Glass kind of come, you know, how long did Hayden Glass, the character, you know, were you working on him, and was he first, or was the actual story first that you decided, and then you kind of built him around that?
The predicament came first, the concept of, you know, what kind of character and what kind of situation would produce the most drama, I think. I guess I was thinking of the traditional noir characters. Detectives are usually, you know, alcoholics, or, mm-hmm. you know, more recently maybe they might be drug addicts. But no one has ever you've placed a sex addiction with the character that I've seen and really taken it seriously and watched the character struggle with that. So just the sex addiction was rather fascinating as a character fault. But then I thought, well, what kind of predicament could someone be in where the stakes are really high? Well, if he was a vice cop and his job is to arrest prostitutes, but he's also picking up prostitutes on the street for his addiction, the stakes are very high if he gets caught. And then I mm-hmm. thought, well, what if you up that a notch and you know, there's a sexual predator out there killing people, and he's chasing this character, and he understands kind of the way this guy thinks because they share the same addiction, and then ultimately he discovers that, you know, this is Boulevard, you know, the character Hayden Glass discovers that the crimes are connected, and they're connected to him because someone's been sitting in his Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings and listening to him sharing honestly about his struggles. So then the stakes are really high because now he has to either disclose to his captain that he's the connection between his crimes or keep it quiet and just pursue, you know, this killer, which is what he does, and the consequences are tragic. So the character and the situation, you know, just basically the situation is what presented itself first. And then I just tried to create a character that was very human, that didn't have a lot of respect for himself, but his fault was what made him special and different. It's what gave him the edge over other detectives. Some of that does come out of, you know, my experience in Hollywood and film. You know, just the three-act structure. I think that's the thing that really came out of the film experience is a strong three-act structure and an attention to escalating action and you know, like a kind of a set-piece climax resolution.
Right, and before you came on, I don't know if you heard, but I was talking about that the panel that I heard you and Alexandra at was the most informative one where it was screenwriting to the novel because of how you guys did talk about the three-act structure and setting things up and how those things are, you know, how you can bring the reader in, you know, act by act by act and sequence by sequence and going all over. And I just found that, you know, it was it was so fascinating, and I literally wanted to go and hide myself into a room and just start writing because it was like I never really had it explained that way. And I think a lot of aspiring authors should definitely, you know, check those things out because it's very fascinating.
Yeah, it's good storytelling. I mean, if a screenplay is well written, it's generally very good storytelling because you can't afford for it not to be with the millions and millions of dollars that are invested in films. Of course, there are a lot of terrible films that are out there, but those generally fall apart for a lot of other reasons. There are too many, you know, cooks in the kitchen type of reasons, or too many egos involved. There's plenty of reasons why films are poorly made in Hollywood. But when they're done right, when they're a Pulp Fiction or Usual Suspects or Shawshank Redemption or there's, you know, The Godfather or anything, they're brilliant storytelling, and there's a lot to be learned. When I was a development executive, the director of development for Wolfgang Peterson, film director, and he was a big thriller, you know, director. He directed The Line of Fire and Outbreak and Air Force One and Troy and Perfect Storm. And so I read thousands of thriller screenplays over about a 5-year period. And there's no way that sense of pacing and structure couldn't find its way, you know, into my psyche. So just kind of by osmosis, you read that much, it's going to sit there. And that definitely had an influence in my writing of the novel. I wanted there to be a storytelling that was engaging and filled with action that was believable. I can't stand action that's just gratuitous or
right.
sex or violence that's gratuitous. But I'm very thankful for having to slug through thousands of usually pretty terrible screenplays, the course of 5 years. But I also learned a lot. You learn what not to do, what makes a screenplay work, and what makes a screenplay fail through that process.
Well, I want to remind everybody, we're talking here with Stephen J. Schwartz, best-selling author of Beat, which is out now. Before that, it was Boulevard, so the two books in the series here of the Hayden Glass series. And your website is stephenjschwartz.com. Great website. You have a lot of information. People can find out a lot of things about you. And the one thing they can find out about you, because the brilliant things that you've done, which I've been, first of all, was the Sex Edition, because, we learned about this, I think, the biggest with Tiger Woods about a year and a half ago. We kind of heard about it, and I think it was kind of on the Dr. Drew and whatnot. But now, when someone like Tiger Woods all of a sudden had Sex Edition, everybody was like, what the heck is a Sex Edition thing? And you brilliantly put this into your book, which is just so relevant, which is Beat, which is what you talked about. The other thing that was brilliantly done by you was your prequel ebook, Crossing the Line, which a lot of authors miss the boat to be able to do something like that to set up everything instead of having to, what I always feel is waste a lot of pages in books with fluff of things that really don't need to be there. When you put it all here in Crossing the Line as a free download that people can go and get the prequel to Hayden Glass and kind of understand it from the beginning. Love it. What brought you on to be able to do that? I mean, why did you decide to do that one?
Well, first I want to make sure everyone knows that is a short story. Some people think that's an actual book download, and then when they get to the end of page 20, or I forgot how many pages it is, they become very disappointed that they found out it was a short story, not a novel. It's a short story. What happened was my editor at Torforge suggested that I do something like that as a free download to kind of give an introduction to the world of Hayden Glass to people who were not familiar with the writing and who were hesitating on buying a Boulevard or Beat. I thought, well, it might be interesting to see the moment that RHD Homicide Detective Hayden Glass crossed the line when he was a younger officer. And the story is about when he was about a year into the LAPD and he spent some time in the vice unit. And his job was to, arrest prostitutes. And he stumbled upon a situation where a girl he's planning to arrest intrigues him, and he ends up crossing the line. And that's the moment that his addiction peaks out. And from that point on, he becomes a different person. And it's not so much that he suddenly becomes, Mr. Hyde. It's something that's been building with him. He's had problems in his marriage. He's had problems in his history, as we find out in Boulevard. This was just waiting to happen, and it could have been an alcohol or a drug addiction or a gambling addiction or whatever, but this is what surfaced. This is how he was wired for one reason or another, and from that moment on, he started picking up prostitutes and going to strip clubs and massage parlors, and that's what ended his marriage, and that's what caused him to go to Sex Addicts Anonymous and get a sponsor and work the steps, and there is where his struggle began. So I just thought it would be neat to show that moment.
Now, you mentioned we were at RT. You talked a lot about your research, and you were on the panel when you went to San Francisco, and, you rode around with the police officers and how they didn't give you the bulletproof vest because that's just way too much paperwork. And so you're like, oh, I'm okay. But how was the research going to the massage parlors is what I want to know with the sex addiction.
Well, the research is always the big question on Boulevard. I talk about this on my website and in a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
This comes from personal history. This is something I struggled with, the same kind of thing with massage parlors and strip clubs and prostitutes. I had a 10 or 15 year struggle with this in my life, and I ended up became a crisis moment in my marriage. And my wife and I went to counseling, and I thought my marriage was over, and I didn't know what was going on in my life. And then we had a therapist that said, don't think of him as a you know, an adulterer, think of him as an alcoholic, and that began the learning, you know, of process for me of what was going on in my life, and so it was a very long, difficult struggle. Writing Boulevard was my catharsis. It brought my wife and I together. She basically is my story.
Wow.
She's a phenomenal story person, and she pushed me to go deeper. And our marriage has become, you know, really close. It's been about 8 years now since that occurred. So it strengthened us as a team, as a marriage, and it was a difficult thing to go through. So what I thought when I was beginning to write my first novel, which was Boulevard, was that if I had read a popular crime novel like that when I was lost and driving around the streets, if I had read that book, I would have seen myself in the pages, and I would have realized that there's a name for what I was doing. It was an addiction. And I also would have realized that there was help. There was things I could do to work out of it, which I didn't know. And I think a lot of people who are doing that have no idea what they're doing. They just think they're terrible people, as I did.
Right.
I wanted to write something that could, you know, could help some people out too, and if at all possible. So
the emotions in Boulevard for you are extremely deep, and that's probably why the book came out so brilliantly, because you put so much of yourself and emotion into that, which is what shines it through.
Yeah, I mean it's almost memoir, you know, in a way. I mean the
yeah,
character.
You write about
mean,
what you know, and that's what a lot of authors don't do.
Yeah, and if you don't know it, I believe you do write what you know. But if you don't know it, you better learn it. And that's why
right.
I love, you know, the research in, you know, for San Francisco. I was basically embedded with the police department there for a couple of months, going on ride-alongs and going to crime scenes and doing drug busts, and it was just fantastic. But that, I had about 100 typed pages of notes from just hanging out with the cops up there, and I used probably 1% of that actually in the book. But all of the rest of it influenced everything that I didn't write. You know, I was able to present the world authentically by not writing things that I could only imagine. You know, I knew what was right and what was wrong in their world, so I didn't have to try to make things up.
And now, since you talked about, you know, being a screenwriter and how that is just such a brutal business and how it's very difficult. I mean, you're just getting stuff thrown at you all the time, and, you know, it's not the glorious things that I think a lot of people who are not in it think that it could be. Oh, wow, you know, writing screenplays, da, da, da. It's not like that, and people need to understand that it's not like that. Now, let's say, you know, that beat is being optioned and whatnot. Knowing what you know, how involved do you think that you would get if one of your books here would become, you know, to the full-length film? Would you get involved with that? Because a lot of authors don't have that ability, and then the book kind of fails when people read it, when it makes it to the screen. Everybody says the book is better than the movie. You know, what do you think that they would do different, or you could do different, if something like that would happen?
Well, they're definitely two different mediums. So the most important thing to realize when going from, you know, from an author to a screenwriter is that the book and the film will never be the same. They're completely different experiences. So the film will try to capture the essence and the major motifs, you know, that are presented in the book, but there's no way you can take a 300, 400, 500 or more page novel and really transfer that experience into a 110-page screenplay. And the way I like to see a screenplay is, you know, at its best, a screenplay is a visual poem, and it has to be very, very tight, and you have to be able to say things in pictures and translate what's written in narrative in a novel or in dialogue in a novel and transfer those to images. So it's a completely different process. However, I really, you know, if I get a film option and we're out trying to do that, then I will fight to be the screenwriter and adapt the books to the screenplay. However, you know, I really won't have any control. You know, once I've written a draft or two, if the producers who purchased the option choose to hire another writer to rewrite me, that's they're in their rights to do that, and they can hire, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 different writers to do it. They can spend 10 years rewriting it, and then come back to me and have me do a final polish. You know, it's just that's the kind of crazy world it is. If it goes as a TV series, which is another route that we're looking at, then I'll probably have less involvement because TV is just handled differently. They have writer-producers who are showrunners, and these showrunners are big names that have relationships with the networks, and they generally have a great track record. So I would not be able to write the pilot episode, most likely, but I could come on as a staff writer, let's say, if it made it a series.
So what everybody likes to know is, how many book deals, and again, this is Stephen J. Schwartz, stephenjschwartz.com, best-selling author of Beat, the book that is out now, second book in the Hayden Glass series. First book was Boulevard with the prequel here, short story, Crossing the Line, free ebook download. Find it on his website at stephenjschwartz.com. So now, what can we expect? Everybody always likes to know this. I know Beat just came out, but what can we expect here in the future from Hayden Glass? What are you working on coming up now?
I'm taking a little break from Hayden. I'm doing a standalone right now, which is an international thriller with a young FBI agent. I'm kind of open up to a little bit broader audience. I think that it won't be quite as dark as Hayden, the Hayden series, but it will be very psychological and I really like the psychological thrillers and putting a protagonist through just an impossible situation and having the reader take that journey with them and wonder if they would make the same decisions. So it's that kind of thing, but more on an international level based in Europe. So that's what I'm working on now. I'm struggling with it because it's not my character that I'm used to, so everything's new and all the characters have to be developed from the ground up and the world all has to be created and treated, and I don't feel real comfortable writing something until I've done all the research, and so I've spent many, many months, doing research, and there's still more to do. So I'm doing that.
Right.
The other things I'm doing now is I'm having some screenwriting opportunities because of the novel. So I've been hired to rewrite a 3D zombie film, which is completely
nice.
Out of character.
I always like zombies, and then in 3D. Are you kidding me?
3D, yeah. It's fun, and the thing that I've learned about working in the film business is it's all about who you work with, the people.
True.
Just in any job you've got, you work. If you're lucky, you work for an individual, for your boss, and not for the general company, whatever the company is. You work for people who are good, and most of the times working in Hollywood, you're working with miserable souls, and they treat you miserably, and it's a bad experience.
Right.
But I've lucked into a situation where these are really bright, creative producers. They've got the money to do the project. They're doing 3D conversions from 2D films to 3D. They're doing Titanic right now, where they're taking Titanic in 2D and making it 3D. Their work is fantastic. They've totally made me a proponent of 3D when I didn't used to be, just from looking at what they've done. And they're really creative and bright, and the director and I just fall in love with each other. I mean, the guy is just, we see things eye to eye, absolutely beat for beat on the page. So it's been a lot of fun writing this. And it's going to be even more fun when it goes and should be going to pre-production this summer.
So the one thing, Seth, because you have two books out, and so you're still a fairly new author getting going, what was the biggest myth that you think that you had in your head, but then once all of a sudden you became an author and you became doing it, was dispelled when you started doing it before you were an author, that you thought, this is the way it is, but it wasn't that way when you decided to get in and you did it? What was that big thing that you think kind of dispelled your myth from, being an author?
Well, yeah, I didn't attend any conferences before I became published, so I was under the impression I didn't have a really realistic look at the world of being a novelist, and I kind of figured, well, once your book was published, the whole world opens up, and you get to quit your day job and just travel the world, and the publishers send you on a tour, wherever you need to go.
I laugh just because I hear the story 100 times, but keep going.
It was just. I mean, as fantastic as it has been, because it's been the greatest experience of my life, bar none, to be able to, well, except for my marriage and the birth of my kids. But
sure.
Other than that, it's been so phenomenal. You know, to go to a bookstore and see your book, you know, on the shelves, and to do signings, and to do launches, and to be at the Festival of Books. I'm, this is my second year. I'll be on a panel at the Festival of Books, the LA Times, the deal in LA. And, you know, these kinds of things are so damn exciting that it makes up for the all the disillusion that occurred when I you know, realized that I would have to pay for everything involving any kind of marketing. And, you know, also when you go to when you go on a tour, when you finally, you know, pay all the money, you go on a tour, and you end up at a Borders in Las Vegas, and one person shows up, and there's the composer, Stephen Schwartz, you know, who wrote Godspell, not the writer, Stephen Schwartz, who wrote Boulevard. So those things are, you just kind of, you live and learn, and you go, okay, so this is it. This is the gig, and this is the way it's going to be until I've written, you know, 10 or 15 books. And it's the beginning of a career. So balancing that out with screenwriting, if I can continue to do that, write a, you know, novel a year and take screenwriting assignments, that's a pretty good balance, and hopefully it'll keep me from having to go back to some normal type of day job, which was punishing.
Really? I mean, yeah, that's what we all don't want a normal day job, do we?
Well, I had that right through, you know, I had a normal, when I had left the film business, I'd actually left the film business so that I could get away from Hollywood, because it was 24/7 and I wasn't getting any writing done. And I took a normal day job, and that's when I wrote Boulevard and Beat. So through the entire process of writing Boulevard and Beat, and through all the marketing and launches of both of those books, I had a normal 9-to-5 day job that was killing me. And it was really hard to write evenings and weekends and all my vacation time and all my sick time. I was always just writing. In January, just in January, finally, you know, after 3 years of this, of being an author, published author about 3 years, finally in January I was able to quit that day job, only because I was able to replace it with, you know, a screenwriting assignment. And if the screenwriting can be my day job and writing books can be my passion, that'll be great, and then someday, hopefully, writing the books will be the day job, and, you know, and I won't have to do anything but write books. That would be great.
Well, I'll tell you, Stephen, it's been great, and we are so lucky that Hollywood's full-time loss and part-time gain is our full-time gain, that you're writing books now, because it's great to be able to see that, because there's just not enough, you know, there's a lot of good books out there, but there's not enough just the great characters that you've been able to create here with Hayden Glass, and to stay in front of, like you said, with the Sex Edition and the things that are relevant in today's day and age, and making it, you know, more of now and in the future, and it's fabulous, and we thank you so much.
John, thank you so much. I had a great time talking with you.
And we will
really
see you at the LA Times Book Festival.
Yeah, I'll be there, man. I'm looking forward to seeing you there, too, and say hi to Shannon and me, too.
All right, will do. You have a good one.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Again, everybody, that was Stephen J. Schwartz. The book is Beat. It is available now. The first book is Boulevard. It is the first, second book in the Hayden Glass series. Boulevard's the first. StephenJSchwartz.com is the website. You can get on there, and you can also find and get a free download of a short story, which is the prequel called Crossing the Line. Definitely something that you want to check out and you want to get to. You know, Stephen is an author that should be on everybody's watch list, and we were so lucky to be able to find him at the RT Book Convention, because, you know, it's another great thing when you go to these conventions to find these authors that you didn't know, and to find these great books, and then to hear their stories, and to be able to hear the emotions and the things that he put in the Boulevard and then with Beat is something that you have to do, because it just shines through the page. So that's Stephen J. Schwartz, and you can follow him too on Facebook, and he has Twitter, and it's all on his website. So we want to thank everybody here for this great Saturday on Suspense Radio. We had a lot of fun. We are going out to the heat, 94 degrees today, and don't feel sorry for us. I mean, it is 94 degrees, but it could be 30 wherever you guys are at. Have a good one. We'll see you guys next time. I'm John. Later.